There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you? Max, I wish I knew how to quit you. But then we'd have no show! Welcome to Max Mike Movies. And if this is your first time, how the hell did you find us? And thanks for coming by. We're a little podcast that looks and talks about movies of all kinds. We make series of about 8 films apiece and then start all over again, which is what we're doing this week. Didn't win. It is the series, and us looking at Best Picture Oscar upsets is the subject. Can't imagine why we chose to do that now, Barbie. But hey, who knows why we do anything? And who's we? Well, that part of we is the cow to my poke, Max Old Paint Levine. Winnie for us, Max.
Line.
Max, honey, we're shooting.
Oh, okay. Oh sorry.
And I am the sore to his saddle, Mike, goddamn sheep loose. First film up is 2005's Brokeback Mountain, a movie that definitely did not win Best Picture. And what did? Why, Crash!
But,
King of the Impossible. But which film really deserved that Oscar, according to us? Only one way to find out, and that's to listen to us. But before you listen to us talk about that, listen to us talk about our...
poll question.
If you remember last episode, Errol was hanging by his fingernails over the ravine when a train could be heard roaring down the track below.
Roar.
Wait, maybe we asked you what your favorite Western was. Probably.
I think that's more likely.
Probably the latter, yeah, because this is what you had to say. Over at the website, where penguins, walrus, and igloos are a mainstay, Vince, tamer of all things cold and wild, wrote us, quote, "I know I am not alone in this. I just don't like Western films. I can't put a finger on why exactly, but there is something about the setting that just doesn't interest me. Well, I love the landscape and the desert, but everything else I lose interest in," end quote. And no.
Well, he's a Canadian. They don't have West there. Everything's north.
This week's film was shot almost entirely in Canada.
Yeah, in the northern part.
The western part.
They don't have west there. Aren't you listening? They only have north. Everything
there is north.
It's impossible
for them not to have west.
They don't have west. They don't have it. I checked.
Anyway, you are not alone. Thanks, Vince. George Saulnier was next with, quote, "not much of a fan, but Little Big Man, Unforgiven, and Blazing Saddles," end quote. Damn good list. Thanks, George.
Yeah.
Keith Wright commented off George with, quote, "I agree with this list, and I would add 310 to Yuma, both versions. I also don't mind Dances with Wolves, although it's kind of long," end quote. Thanks,
and
Keith.
The wolves always want to lead.
Yeah, it's long because of the Kostnor. There's lots of Kostnor
to
in it.
To be like the Kostnor.
Remember, everything comes back to Robot Monster.
Everything.
Dave, master of the Mac-Man, wrote us, quote, "I enjoy a good Western and, of course, the interaction between Western movies and the samurai movies is fun. That said, my better half doesn't like them, so I have seen very few over the last 29 years. The West is beautiful, and I love it when a Western captures the scenery. And there is a certain romance about that semi-lawless time period, where a man has to live on wits and skills. There is a lot of room in that environment to create interesting characters, people who march to the best of their own drummer. Unforgiven is the last one I remember seeing, and I loved it, but don't remember much about it other than the glorious scenery and intense story. Two other films that stand out in my memory are High Noon, which doesn't have the glorious Western landscape shots that I enjoy, but has an intense story that probably doesn't stand up too well in the 21st century due to the age difference between the leading man and the leading lady. And Stagecoach. On the Japan side, Tampopo is perhaps an enjoyable homage to the spaghetti Western. And of course, the crossovers like Seven Samurai Magnificent Seven, Yojimbo A Fistful of Dollars, and Sanjuro A Few Dollars More. I'm hoping that someday someone does feature-length films that do justice to Lonesome Dove books. I understand that there was a TV series, but have never had a chance to see it," end quote. Imagine what he would have written if he didn't like Westerns. Thanks, Dave.
Cool. Good stuff.
Yeah, as always. Roland Hardy gave us, quote, "Westerns are not my favorite. However, Unforgiven with Clint Eastwood and Tombstone are extremely watchable and worth the time," end quote. Thanks, Roland.
Yeah.
Nick Hoffman was next with, quote, "The very first live-action movie I saw in the theater was True Grit with John Wayne, so that's a sentimental favorite. Rooster Cogburn is such a great name. Obviously, Blazing Saddles is in its own orbit. Also loved Pale Rider and Unforgiven, end quote. Lots of good ones. Thanks, Nick. Mm. I don't know Pale Rider personally, but it's all right.
Yeah, it's a very nice IPA.
No.
Yeah, it's another Clint Eastwood movie.
Oh, is it?
On it. Quite honestly, it bears a lot of similarities to High Plains Drifter.
I think my favorite title for a Western is McClintock, because it actually has that exclamation point in the title. So you have to say it, McClintock!
I don't think you do.
Well, why else is the exclamation point there? You have no, you can't see, you don't know. Adam Mark had nothing to say this week. Oh, well, just a little something, it seems. Kidding, of course. He said, quote, Westward of the Women, 1951. The lead pioneer of a California settlement heads back east to recruit a group of single women, widows, spinsters, young things running away from their stifled home lives, to travel west to marry his lonely, entirely male group of single workers and ranch hands. He hires a gruff trail guide and a posse of cowboys to escort the women safely through the Rocky Mountains on an Oregon Trail-style wagon train. A bunch of funny
classic... Did they all die of dysentery?
No. A bunch of funny classic Hollywood character actresses sign up and the wagon train heads off. And then, the men all die. Ooh. All of them.
Oh, dear.
The women are left to pull themselves together and drive their wagon teams without help and face blizzards, windstorms, Native Americans, problematic, but oh well. Hunger, floods, and other catastrophes, apparently dysentery being one of them. Along the way, they have amazing conversations by day as they drive the teams of oxen and by night as they gaze at stars. Conversations about their origins, how they see themselves, what they hope for in the future. We witness how these dreams change as the film progresses. The character actresses come into their own as strong individuals and not just chattel to be married off. Not all of them make it to California. It's funny, romantic, beautifully shot, and deeply moving at times. Few of the actresses are classic beauties, making the story all the more interesting. It's dated, of course, but great fun. Westward Ho! End quote. Westward Ho! Not a great alternative title for that film.
Especially given the setup. Yes,
I know, right? I don't know if he did that on purpose, but
that actually sounds really interesting. I've never heard of this movie,
and it's 1951.
Yeah,
like a woman-centric Western. We might have to look into that.
We might indeed.
Thank you, Adam. Dan Schaefer's reply went something like this: quote. Silverado is a favorite. I also like The Long Riders and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. See our entire episode on Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. I also recently watched The Hateful Eight, which was really well done. I'm not a huge Tarantino fan, but this one was pretty good, end quote. Thanks,
Dan. That was an interesting take on the Westerns.
Yeah, I didn't see it. Val Coons, who just might have something to do with the universe's second best podcast, Q Footsteps, posted, quote, Not really, but like anything, there are exceptions. For me, there are two, Stagecoach and Rio Bravo. Stagecoach is really more about the true nature of people, and Rio Bravo is about the relationships and the obvious camaraderie between the actors.
Ricky Nelson singing.
Yeah, we're getting to that. I think it's Dean Martin's best work, end quote. Oh, thanks, Val.
Yeah.
Dr. Rebecca Pelkey, who knows more than a little bit about the Native American side of things, wrote, and I'm glad she did, quote, Given the amount of damage the genre has done to indigenous people, I'm not much of a fan. When they're on screen, native people are stereotyped, historicized, dehumanized, and portrayed as savages coming to take land that is mythologized as rightfully belonging to white people. Even when native people aren't on screen, that American mythology of a wide open and unclaimed frontier reinforces the idea that the land was somehow destined to belong to Americans. Having said all of that, I used to love Tombstone, and when I was much, much younger, I was absolutely obsessed with a TV show called The Young Riders about the Pony Express.
Oh, yes.
When I have to teach the genre, I usually show Johnny Guitar. End quote.
Oh, I've heard of that. I don't know much about it.
Yeah, I don't either, but I really, really appreciate that perspective. Thanks, Becca.
Yeah.
Derek Steele, photographer, not spy, regardless of what Max thinks,
wrote... clearly he's a gunfighter of the Old West. Derek Steele, town marshal.
Photographer. Wrote, quote, I'll keep my Tarantino at bay this time just to provide a variety in my answers. One, Rango. Yes, it's animated, but it's a fun little story of adventure, and it stars a lizard. Two, Hostiles, with Christian Bale as the American captain forced to escort his former enemy and old and dying tribal chief Wes Studi back to his homeland, end quote. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Huh. Well, we got an animated answer in there. Thanks, Derek.
Yeah. Thank you, Marshall. Mighty kind.
Photographer. AJ Shems gave us, quote, 310 to Yuma is a good one. Not typically a Western fan and find a lot of them cheesy, but this one I really enjoyed. And Bale and Crow deliver most definitely, end quote. Bale and Crow, they're cops!
Oh, he means the remake. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks, AJ. Yeah, I should think so. Benjamin Carl's reply went, quote, Rio Bravo, John Wayne, Dean Martin, Ricky Nelson, before Westerns took themselves so seriously, end quote. Ricky Nelson, a name that screams cowboy. Thanks, Javi.
And Angie Dickinson.
Now, that's different. I could see her doing that.
She's
Man, could you see an Angie Dickinson, Barbara Stanwyck film?
That'd be cool. You wouldn't need anybody else. The two of them could just do the movie.
Angie Dickinson and Barbara Stanwyck beat up the West.
Yep.
Stephen the assistant what, I'd like to know, said, quote, the good, the bad, and the ugly, Slow West, Outlaw Josie Wales, he says all Clint Eastwood are Westerns, really, and Star Wars, A New Hope, end quote.
Wait, okay. Star Wars? I can see that. Well, no, Star Wars has a lot of elements of the Western in it.
Well, maybe it takes place in West space? Thanks, well, the assistant.
West Tatooine, sure.
I mean, Tatooine is pretty dusty, I'll give it that.
Yep.
And they keep going back. It's a giant sandbox. There's cat poop everywhere. Stop going to Tatooine. Anyway, Aaron Gelman typed, quote, though it's no longer Sunday, not that it matters, I would still like to put in a mention for High Noon. Great theme song and a film done in real time. The Good and the Bad, the Ugly, and Tombstone, end quote. Thanks, Aaron.
Yep.
Richard Tatum, who has invented nothing, gave us,
except, quote, the Tatum.
Nothing. Quote, mixed feelings on the genre, but loved High Noon, Shane, and of course, Logan. It is one, prove to me it's not, end quote. Huh. Interesting.
All right. Logan. Yeah. Oh, you mean the one with Wolverine?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's you black know, and white like a lot of Western.
I could kind of see that.
I'm the snicked of the old West. Mental powers of the old West.
Mutants smothered in gravy, Texas style.
Thanks, Richard. Seth Jacobs wrote simply, quote, True Grit, the original 1969 version, end quote. Thanks, Seth.
Yeah, good one.
Lastly, Lauren Buxbaum answered with, quote, keeping in mind that I generally watched Westerns on TV with my dad in the 60s and 70s, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I think I eventually saw all of it, but my dad always switched back and forth among several movies in those days, so it may have been over several years.
That's maddening.
Thanks. Well, of course, I'd love to hear her recount the plot and find out that she literally is recounting the plot from four or five different films.
I'm sure that's how it is, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why Clint Eastwood at some point turns into Gary Cooper, but I figured it was just some sort of artistic choice.
Yeah, I don't understand exactly why after they knock over the stagecoach, suddenly there's a woman's head in a pan and she's still alive.
And who's Alfredo Garcia anyway? But what about you, Max? What gets your giddy up to go?
Honestly, I do like Westerns. I just, again, it's nostalgia. I do recognize that they are culturally not that great.
Problematic.
But I used to love the old John Ford movies, and I still think The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance is terrific.
He was the greatest of them all.
Not the Burt Bacharach song.
Oh.
The John Ford Western with Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne and Lee Marvin.
Mm-hmm.
No, is it Lee Marvin or James Coburn? I actually can't remember.
They're the same person.
Yeah, pretty
you know
much.
That, right? At different parts of their life, they are the same person.
Of course. And also Fort Apache, and I do agree with those who say Stagecoach, another John Ford, and those are all great. I know you don't really like Westerns much, does you?
Nope, I doesn't. However, for some reason, I actually like Unforgiven. I think it's a really well-made film.
It is.
There's a performance, and I can't remember the actor's full name. His first name is James, and it is spelled the weirdest way ever. It's J-A-I-M-Z. And he plays this young gunfighter who actually turns out has terrible eyesight. And when it comes time to actually have to shoot somebody, he hides out in the outhouse because he can't actually do it. But it's and I have problems with Clint as a person. Clint has some issues I think he needs to work through.
Like his tendency to talk to empty chairs.
Yeah, but quite honestly, he's a really good director and surprises the crap out of me when it also says, oh yeah, the score was done by him too. And like, wait, what? Like when I saw In the Line of Fire and it's like, score by Clint Eastwood, like, it was?
That's him on the piano.
Yep. Is he like John Carpenter? How did that work? Tombstone, but really I like the movie pretty much only for Val Kilmer, because when he's on screen, the film is awesome. And then when he's not on screen, things happen, I guess. I really don't remember.
I'm your Huckleberry.
Yeah, he's down by the water. Down by the creek, walking on water. And also, I haven't seen it since the 70s, but I remember really liking Little Big Man. It was a film that I remember treating Native Americans with some actual respect. And it's a Western, maybe the only Western with Dustin Hoffman in it.
I think so, yeah.
And
back then, of course, he was Dusty Hoffman.
Yeah, Dusty Trail. We'll see, but maybe even this week's film. Yeah. Maybe we'll see. But it's all nice, really nice, and we thank you for all your great answers.
Which they are terrific.
They are. You always bring up stuff, especially this week, Adam. I, you know, never heard of that film, not even in a little bit, and I'm interested.
I'm totally intrigued.
And again, Becca, your perspective on the Native American side of things, invaluable. Thank you all. But that leads us to our next question. What's your favorite filmic love story? Gay, straight, other, which is it and why? Let us know and we'll spread your awesome answers wide over the airwaves. Now, I know we did ask about your favorite rom-com once, but I'm not looking for that. And you can probably guess why I came up with this question. Your favorite love story of any film, on any filmic love story, I should say, of any kind. Next, though, is our search for
the facts.
Brokeback Mountain. Budget, $14 million. Take. Well, everyone knows that no one, and I mean no one, wants to see a gay cowboy movie, which explains why it only pulled in a meager $178 million.
Hagen!
What? Wow. Cool. Yeah. Lots. Actually, I think to this date, I didn't have this in the trivia, it is Focus Features' most profitable film.
I believe it.
Heath Ledger was asked, likely many times, if he was uptight about playing an openly gay man. He said he was only afraid he wasn't mature enough to do it justice. Another reason that I'm really sorry he's gone.
Heath, you left us too soon, buddy.
Way too soon. Heath Ledger and Michelle Williams met on the set and together had a daughter. Yes. Sadly, the relationship didn't last past 2007. Jake Gyllenhaal, however, is their daughter's godfather.
Aww.
There was a cowboy camp for the actors in this so they could learn the ropes and roughen up. Ledger declined as he'd grown up on farms in his native Australia.
Crikey.
Crikey, then.
That ain't a horse. So he was out there herding kangaroos.
Sure.
And koala bears.
Annie Proulx, who wrote the novella on which this movie is based, signed copies and presented them to the two main actors of the film. When signing Jake, she signed to Jake. But with Ledger, she signed it to Ennis. Once she realized her mistake, she left it in ish because she felt that Ledger had so embodied the character to her, he was Ennis.
Wow.
Daniel Day-Lewis was a big fan of Ledger's performance in this and dedicated his SAG award for There Will Be Blood to him.
Oh, classy. And
Anne Hathaway auditioned for Ang Lee dressed as a princess. She had to do so on a lunch break while she was filming Princess Diaries 2.
Oops.
This film was cheap, so much so, it made back its budget in its first week of release, even though that release was limited. This was the first movie to be released both as a DVD and a download at the same time. The movie was also still playing in theaters.
Whoa.
Lies, lies, lies. Anne Hathaway claimed she was good with horses. Well, like many actors before her, she lied.
Why must you turn this picture into a house of lies?
But when she got the part, she went on a crash course in horses.
Ah.
And more lies. Those weren't sheep. Well, not all of them. There needed to be 2,500 of the fluffy critters, but they only had 700 on hand, so made the rest out of... CG.
No.
Some of the storm clouds were also...
Thought you were going to say they cloned some of them.
No, that would still
like
be a sheep.
Dolly.
Hello, Dolly. Some of the storm clouds were also fake.
No, Spielberg clouds.
I got to say, until I read that, I didn't know.
Nope, I had no idea.
When the Oscar for Best Picture was given out, there was an apparent gasp running through the audience as everyone expected this movie to win. Even presenter Jack Nicholson was surprised as he had been one of those who had voted for it. Two members of the crew came out during the shooting of this film, inspired by the story, to do so.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Nice.
This was the first film to win Best Director in all of the following ceremonies: the Academy, Directors Guild of America, BAFTA, Golden Globe, and Critics' Choice.
Wow.
So far, this is Jake Gyllenhaal's only Oscar nod. You couldn't see this movie in China, but the Chinese government was more than happy to tout the name of a Chinese director, although Ang Lee's from Taiwan, when he won a Best Director Oscar.
Taiwan is the same thing because it is part of China. Put the bayonet down, please.
I'm going to disagree.
Yeah, so do I think all the people of Taiwan.
Yeah. And in a big surprise, when hunting for trivia, it seems there was both a remake of this movie in 2014 and a sequel in 2020.
Well, at least neither of them had musicals. Oh, no.
Well, the second one, the sequel has songs in it. I don't know that it's a musical. I didn't know it even existed until I was literally, like, this morning. I'm like, I'm not
interested. Brokeback Mountain 2, Brokebackier?
Brokebackiest? I guess it's the third one.
Brokebackerack? I don't know.
Broke again? I don't know. We'll just file that under meh. And likely tons more naughty, naughty cowboy stories. But for now, unless Max, do you have any other trivia you want to throw in there?
Nope, I'm good.
Let's get to the plot.
Yeah.
Sorry, obligatory.
Ponies.
Hands, really. It's 1963 and two kind of down and out cowboys, or is it sheep boys, are looking for work herding over the summer up on Brokeback Mountain. One of them is meant to sleep with the sheep to keep an eye out for predators. The other, down in camp. You know what I mean. They're meant to sleep separately, not together.
Sure.
But that doesn't last long.
Some of them like it!
Shut up. Soon, Jack and Ennis, neither being that open or expansive, start to slowly bond over some whiskey and rather cold nights. One stormy night, Jack tells Ennis it's not worth trying to make it back up the mountain to stay with the sheep. He should come and sleep in the tent and... Well, that was unexpected. Seems Jack is a good deal more friendly than Ennis thought. And when he makes advances on Ennis, Ennis initially fights back. And then suddenly, his pants are off and, well, leaves float down the river. The morning after sees Ennis thinking that this whole share the tent thing was a mistake, but their feelings can't be held back for long. And soon, the sheep boys, alone in the wilderness, are developing a real relationship. In 1963... The summer soon comes to a close and the boys are heading their own ways, Ennis expecting to get married that fall. And so he does. Seems this was just a summer fling. Except a few years later, Jack has tracked Ennis down and suggested they go off on a fishing trip. Ennis, married, has two children and a good marriage, and he can't wait for Jack to get there. Off they go, and off go the leaves down that river. Jack wants them to live together. Ennis can't see it, saying there is no way the world would stand for such shenanigans. So they have to settle for a handful of visits per year. Soon, Jack gets married too and has a son. Years pass with the boys going fishing as often as they can get away with it. But Ennis' wife knows what's going on and divorces him. Jack's marriage is fine, but he's aching to be permanently with Ennis. There's no way Ennis can make that commitment. They split from their last trip frustrated and possibly unable to continue their nearly 20-year on-and-off relationship the way they have. Suddenly, Ennis finds out that Jack is dead, killed in a roadside accident. Probably. He's left with nothing but what might have been one of Jack's old shirts, his scent still lingering. The end.
The film!
Yeah, sorry if that's a little sad, but,
I'm not crying, you're crying.
The movie, you want to just talk about the actors first? Let's talk about the actors.
Okay.
Okay.
Shut up!
Depending on how you look at it, the top billing technically goes to Heath Ledger, as he was up for Best Actor, and Jake was up for Best supporting actor, which I totally don't see.
There's some weird formula the Academy has where they calculate the number of minutes you're on screen. I don't know.
I'm going to disagree in this case. I honestly can't see either of them as anything but leading actor.
Yeah, yeah.
And one leads the other into a tent. Yeah. Heath Ledger. I mean, we just said it. Gone too goddamn soon.
If nothing else, my God, the accent. You know, he's doing, this guy is an Aussie, and he's doing this absolutely flawless, I think it's supposed to be Wyoming accent.
Well, he's from Wyoming, but I guess he said there was a little taste of Texas in there, too. But as soon as he shows up, we know, not only does he not want trouble, he's doesn't want to talk to people. He's not an outgoing guy. Like, he keeps his head down. He doesn't make eye contact much. You can tell he's kind of skittish. We don't know why, but like, his body language right from the start, you understand who this guy is.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of depth to be able to pull something like that off. A lot of people say that his Joker is the pinnacle of his career. I kind of think maybe this is up there too.
I think so. The Joker's a terrific performance. Don't get me wrong. It's amazing.
But the thing I'll say about the Joker is we really don't know anything about him.
Yeah, this guy, we know Ennis. We just do.
Yeah.
And which is remarkable considering how little he actually talks.
Right.
He's incredibly taciturn. He's incredibly withdrawn. But you could, it's right under the surface. All that terrible, barely leashed anger.
Well, and let's face it, Ennis is just broken. And I want to come back to the idea of toxic male masculinity, because it plays a huge part in this film. But that's what he is. He is a victim. I don't mean he is a product. He is a victim of toxic male masculinity. Just the way he holds his jaw when he talks, like he's like it's a force to just get any words out at all. And he even, you know, like one point Jack says to Ennis, it's like, wow, that's the most you've spoken in a week. And he just sort of jokes and says, that's the most I've ever said in a year. And you figure that's probably true, but this is an amazing performance. It's very nuanced. It's very subtle. It's all of it, especially when Ennis just literally can't take it anymore. And the only thing he knows to do is just lash out angrily because he has no idea how to deal with his own emotions.
That's it. Either it's expressed through violence or he actually gets physically ill.
Yeah.
Oh God, that's so heartbreaking when he's like, when he and Jake part ways at one point, and he just doubles over in an alley, and he's gagging. He can't. The emotions are so strong, he can't let them out. He can't get them out.
Well, also just the savagery of their kiss is so sad, because it's obvious he's desperate for it, for that contact, for that emotion, and he's fighting with himself because he's been told that kind of thing that is wrong literally since he was a kid, and we'll see how.
Let's get to that later, but that's not the performance. That's more the story.
Yeah.
Heath Ledger's incredible in this. Yeah. He really is.
And Jake Gyllenhaal.
He does,
surprising. Like Jake's a fine actor. I think in general he is a decent actor. I don't think of him as a great actor, but both of these guys are really brave. Let's face it. They're both very, very straight, and we know they're straight. And I want to say Jake leaps into it just as much as Heath does.
I think so, and I think Jake Gyllenhaal is an underrated actor. He's very good at restrained characters. You ever saw him on Donnie Darko? He's remarkable.
Yeah.
He really can pull it out, and he doesn't have that barely leashed fury that Heath Ledger does.
No, but he's got a predatory nature to him.
He does, a little bit, and he's much more, I can't say he's comfortable with what he is, but he's like, yeah, this is the way I am. I have these needs. I mean, he goes down to Mexico looking for a companionship there. He's like, I'm not going to pretend I don't have these needs.
I want to say, of the two of them, he's obviously the one that's actually dealt with them at all.
Yeah.
And Ennis has not. I got to say, though, Jack Twist, gayest name ever.
He does sound like a gay porn actor.
Yeah. I got to say, but he should somewhere be in Oliver, but, you know.
He's also the one who is willing, who says we should try to live together. Yeah. We should try to make a go of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a terrific, it's a very good, it's a great performance. And I got to say, Michelle Williams is heartbreaking as Alma.
You know, she doesn't get mentioned as much, and I literally want to put her performance up there with both of the guys.
Yeah, absolutely. She isn't on screen nearly as much.
No.
But the combination of, she obviously adores Ennis.
Yep.
And the combination of anger and hurt and desperation about her.
Yep.
Oh, it hurts to watch her sometimes. It's a painful performance.
And, you know, this isn't really fair, but her look in this film fits the background so well. She seems like one of those slightly washed out poorer folks that would live in a slightly washed out poorer situation.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think she's perfect in this role. Yeah, she's exactly what you needed. Quite honestly, I'm surprised. I think this might be my favorite performance by Randy Quaid ever.
He does actually a really good job, and he's actually the least... Apart from the fact he plays a complete jackass, he's the least annoying that I've seen him be.
Pretty much.
And Randy Quaid is one of those actors. He's not a bad actor. I think he's a decent actor. But there's just something about him you just go, just stop talking.
Well, apparently Mr. Quaid is somewhat volatile. Somewhat unhinged at times. He did try to sue the production company of this film, stating that his salary had been based on the fact that this was an indie film and therefore they didn't have to pay him as much. And what came up later was, what? And then apparently he withdrew the suit without there being a thing. But whatever.
I don't think it probably didn't pass the giggle test.
Yeah, it's a small part. It is not a big part, but it is intense. And quite honestly, Randy represents a lot of the way people look at gay people.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the fact that his character doesn't lash out and start beating them at some point or even take a shot at them, you know, you're thinking maybe he would. So I got to give some credit to Randy Quaid. And then there's this nobody, Anne something.
No, that was that. Wasn't she married to Shakespeare?
It's maybe some point. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. That was, of course, 500 years ago.
Anne Hathaway, who does not have a lot to do in this movie. But as with everything, first off, I think she's amazing. I think Anne Hathaway is just an absolutely first-rate actor. And it's not just because of those incredible brown eyes. But she is terrific. She can do drama. She can do comedy. She is underused in this, but she was still a kid, you know? She was starting to get... The Princess Diaries, I think, were sort of her breakthrough.
Yeah.
But the second one had just come out. Or, as you said, when she was... auditioning while she was still doing it.
Yeah. I think that mostly it's a case in this film of her not having as big a part, but there is a really nice contrast of when she first sees Jake, she basically goes for him.
Yeah.
And she doesn't literally pull out a lariat and rope Jake, but she kind of does.
Well, I like her line. She walks up to him, "So what are you waiting for, cowboy? A mating call?"
Yeah.
All right, she knows what she wants.
And then she's fun, and then we see little bits of her here and there, but there's a really interesting scene because her family has money.
Yeah.
And her father is very overbearing and is protective of his daughter, which is fine.
But he also looks down on Jack.
Well, he looks on anybody that's going to marry into the money. I'm sure that's part of the deal. And he emasculates Jack when he gets a chance, and there's finally one point where Jack has had enough, and it's Thanksgiving dinner, I believe. Yep. And the father is shoving Jack out of the way to carve the turkey, and Jack goes
overriding him as a father.
And Jack's had enough, and he finally just basically puts the man in his place and says, "You know, sit down and shut up," more or less.
Yeah.
And there's this little smile that Anne Hathaway has, like, "Finally, you stood up to him."
She's been waiting for this.
The really sad part is that. For the most part, that's kind of the last we see of her character till the end of the film.
Yeah. And
we hear from Jack how their marriage has gone, and it seems too bad that might have been a turning point, but it turned out it wasn't. So, not as much to do, but I think she does fine in the role.
Yeah.
Although I have to say this, she is the palest cowgirl ever, and Anne Hathaway is a blonde.
No, the blonde dye job did not do her any favors, but it fit the character.
I mean, it fit the time, too.
Yeah, it did.
There's a lot of and the rest at this point.
Well, the kids, I think, are really good. The daughters, yeah.
Well, there's multiple actors for them all.
True. At one point, we got Mara Rooney, who plays, I think, Alma Jr.
Okay.
At age 19, maybe?
The one she, yeah. 19 when she's getting
Kate
married.
Kate Mara, who is Rooney Mara's sister.
Ah.
And she, again, I just like the scene where she asks to come and live with Ennis.
Yeah.
Because, and in that whole sequence, it's like, yeah, this is his kid. Because she's just the same thing. Doesn't say very much. Keeps a lot inside.
Yeah.
Very stoic, very taciturn. I think that it's a tiny part, but I think it really helps. I think it really works.
Well, I do like the scene where she's telling her father that she's getting married. And initially, Ennis is giving his usual, I can't be there because work thing. And yeah. You can see the disappointment in her face. Not the surprise, but the disappointment. And then he turns around, he basically says, you know, the hell with it. I should come here. And then he gives her a glass of whiskey, which, sure. And it's nice that it's obvious that she still loves her dad, and she probably most remembers them being together when they were younger, and maybe even before the divorce. But it's obvious she wants to have a connection with him. And the saddest part is she does not know him at all.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because there's no way he ever mentioned anything about Jake, or Jack, I should say.
Yeah.
Jake, you're a jerk.
he's Jack.
Yeah, otherwise, there's a bunch of here's and there's, and they were there, and hey, look at me, but...
There are a couple of surprising people in here, like Anna Faris is in this. The great comic actress is LaShawn Malone. She's in one scene. She's the sorority girl who's never stops talking. And her husband is David Harbour from Stranger Things and Hellboy.
Yeah, and speaking of Stranger Things, it seems that he might be interested in Jack Twist, too.
That's nothing. We don't see anything come with that. But yeah, he's basically very indirectly hitting on him at one point.
Yeah. And there's an idea that he may have ended, or at least Jack Twist was basically had given up on Ennis and was seeking to go off with this guy, too, because of a scene at the end of the film where his parents are telling Ennis that he'd heard that this might be a thing. So we'll get to that. Yeah, like you said, the story. The parents, actually, the woman who plays the mother, I thought, also was doing an amazing
job. Roberta Maxwell, yeah.
But, yeah, the film is mostly the guys and their wives and occasionally their kids. And there is not a weak performance. Again, Randy Quaid, surprise, but he, small part, did really well.
He did. There is no weak link here.
No. But I got to throw this in, having worked with one of them once. Sheep suck. hate sheep.
Oh, come on. They're not that bad.
Oh, God. They're so stupid.
Did you work with a sheep?
Oh, when I used to work at a day camp on summer. I was the head of the farm. And we had a sheep, and it's that stupid sheep. They are really dumb and like single purposed of getting away from anything. And as long as they can continue to eat all day, they poop through their wool. It's just, they're awful, awful creatures. Hate sheep. So the fact they have two guys in charge of 2,500 sheep is just cruel.
Yeah, it's amazing they lose as few as they do in this.
Yeah. But the scenery, we talked about this occasionally, how the scenery is kind of a character.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, is the scenery a character?
This is, we have to remember, this is an Ang Lee movie, and Ang Lee is an absolute master about taking the setting and the scenery and making it a character and making you just go, whoa.
Yeah, and the Hulk.
Well, even there, when they're out in the Midwest, out in the Southwest, and the Hulk is beating up the desert or whatever he's doing.
Sand, stupid, kill sand. Yeah.
It still looks amazing. The man is a genius with outdoor shots.
Yeah. And then suddenly, a bear!
I'm afraid in my notes I just have, da bear.
It's a pretty scary bear. It was a hairy bear.
It was a scary bear.
Sorry, that's a deeper. But it's beautiful, beautiful scenery. And it's
gorgeous.
Pretty wild up there, especially when it's August and there's a snowstorm. I was like,
up in the mountains? Yeah, hails the size of marbles. Yikes.
Do they know what August is? Do they understand the idea of August? Because that's not...
Like, not up in those up mountains. There.
Well, again, we're in Western Canada. Yes, they do. So, you know, Alberta, I think, is what I read that they had filmed most of that in. But, yeah. So, I've seen this before. Max, you and I saw it together.
Yes, we did.
Back in 2005. The interesting story was, I don't know when it came out exactly, but I remember it was really cold when we saw it.
Yeah.
And we went to a nice local theater, which sadly is no longer. And I would guess, what, about half an hour before the end of the film?
Something like that? Yeah, I'd say like half an hour, 20 minutes.
Suddenly, the film stops and the lights come up. And I think there was an alarm. And they were like, I'm sorry, we're going to have to ask people to step outside. There was some issue with the theater.
They said there was the fire alarm went off.
Yeah.
They thought there was a fire. We had...
And so the entire audience walked outside, and it was like in the teens. It was cold. Very
it was friggin' cold. Really.
And we waited there, and then people, the usher said, we can give you a pass for another film if you want. And we waited, and about a half an hour later, they let us back in. Nobody left. The entire audience went back in.
The whole audience refused. And they said, look, we can give you a pass. You can come back another day and see it. And everyone is like, no, we'll wait. Thanks.
Well, we wanted to see what was going to happen.
We couldn't just walk away.
So this is not the first time we've seen this film. But
nope.
I'm not going to say whether we liked it or not. Gay cowboys. Gay. yeah.
Oh, come on. What cowboys weren't? A bunch of men, especially these. Remember, a lot of these guys, the cowboys were teenagers, a lot of horny teenagers, all out wearing leather, alone on the range for months.
No, they didn't.
Come on.
And it wasn't. That's just whiskey. Everybody knows that that doesn't count.
Oh, sure.
I got to say this for the pacing of the film, not fast, but also it doesn't feel slow.
No, it's not leisurely. It works really well. There are no scenes, I think, drag. Nothing goes on too long. There are some scenes that are painful to watch, and I wish were over sooner, but they never feel like they're dragged out.
You mean like Bareback Mountain? Because like, ooh, I bet that's
no,
painful.
No, I mean like when Alma is like confronting that whole thing with the fishing tackle box. And
yep.
Saying, you know, you always go up fishing with Jack, and I opened up your tackle box, and I put a note around something, and it was still there when you got back, and it was still there 5 years later.
Yeah, and I gotta wonder, why does she do that? She's already divorced him. She's actually invited him over to the house with her, I don't know, boyfriend, new husband, I'm not even sure, for a meal. I'm guessing it's a holiday. And as he's helping clean the dishes, she just launches into him, I guess, because she couldn't let go of the idea of, like, you didn't know why I divorced you, but this is why. I guess. I don't know.
I'm sure they never talked about it. It's very powerful.
Ennis never talked about it.
Yeah.
Ennis never talks about his socks. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. This film, it is a story, but we're watching the characters. We're watching these really deeply portrayed characters. And that's why things, even though aren't going quickly, although suddenly they are, because we're watching the film, it's 1963, and then suddenly it's 1967, and then suddenly it's 1977.
And it's like, then it's 1983.
Yeah, it's like, when did that happen?
But it's funny, it's done so smoothly.
It is.
And it's done often just by things like, oh, those kids look a lot older suddenly, or where did he get that horrible mustache?
Well, he turns into the Marlboro Man because he kind of really does. That's Jake, by the way. And there might be like an ad on TV, new for 1977, the Dodge whatever. Yeah. It's very subtly done, and it's somehow not jarring.
No, because it's not also like they're talking about major historical events or, oh, look at the new technology, or suddenly someone has a cell phone.
No.
Which I guess you wouldn't have. You might have in 83, but because it's just about the passage of time for these people in their world, in their lives. It's not like the whole world moving on. It's very focused. It's very concentrated.
It is. And it's a very interesting directorial choice. And I got to say, it's exceedingly deftly handled. It's literally like you just said, yeah, there's these people, but the only story we're interested in is Jack and Ennis. Yes, other important things happen in their life. That's cool. They don't contribute to what we're looking at. So we're going to leave that out for now. And that, I think, shows a real maturity as a director, because it's so easy to toss in little things that probably don't add to the big picture, but it's like our flavor, or let's give this actor something to do or whatever. not necessary, even though the film's still over 2 hours long.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel it. It didn't to me.
No, it definitely doesn't feel long.
I got to say, though, the first time when Ennis stays back, like there's Jack going, it's too late. Don't bother going up there. My first thought was, don't go in the tent, Ennis. It's gay in there.
Really, all I was thinking of is when they keep complaining about eating all the beans. It's like, well, you're sharing a pretty small tent. I guess that would be a problem.
Yep. First plot point about beans.
I did like that line. He's like, I'm just sick of beans. And the guy who's giving those supplies, he's too early in the summer to be sick of beans.
Yeah, well, then they go ahead and shoot an elk, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it turns out it was a tranquilizer dart, just so you know. However, that still was not exactly in the how to handle animals legally bylaws, so, yeah, they kind of got.
I also think the elk really hammed up its death scene. I just.
Are you saying that's the worst performance? By an elk.
Yeah, this honestly.
An elk.
You know, I said there were no weak points in the movie. The performances, I gotta say, the elk could have gotten a better elk.
Yeah. Now I want to sort of put you in the spotlight for a second, Max. Now, because this is interesting to me, as a straight person, when you first saw that scene in the tent,
mm-hmm.
how did it make you feel?
Honestly, it made me feel uncomfortable. I wasn't used to seeing that kind of. Well, I mean, it's not even that explicit. You know what's going on, but you don't see a great deal.
No.
But that kind of explicit gay sex, I wasn't used to. You didn't get that in movies.
Yeah.
At least not the movies I saw.
Did you feel it was gratuitous?
Not at all. And honestly, I mean, the actual sex was like, oh, wow, what the hell? This was unusual. But the way they're grabbing onto each other and the desperate need, the desperate need that came across for closeness and just for touch.
Yeah.
I absolutely felt that. That was like, okay, yeah, I get that completely.
And here's the thing. I think that the scene was not only necessary, but it's not an aspect of their relationship that we really dwell on visually.
No.
We basically never see them have sex again. There's a lot of kissing and there's a little bit of cuddling, horseplay.
Yeah. There's a little, you know, there's a couple of naked scenes. We get to see both Gyllenhaal butt and Ledger butt.
Yep. However, later on, we don't see little Gyllenhaal. That's actually a stunt person. It was, however, Heath who jumped into the water. In case you're wondering.
They're like 900, they're like 900 feet up on that cliff.
And about 20-degree water.
Shrinkage.
So I think it's nice that it's not played for gasp factor, and it's not overdone, and quite honestly, you don't see anything. I think the most graphic part is when Ennis spits on his hands, which that's why I was making the joke about Bareback Mountain, because that's not something you really want to do. I just was curious. I figured it probably did make people uncomfortable, but you really don't see much of anything.
No. Mostly it was unfamiliar to me, because I can't think of any movie I'd seen before where I'd seen that kind of explicit gay sex.
Yeah. I do want to bring something back up, though. We said we were going to talk about this, and this is the possibly the biggest character in this film, which is toxic male masculinity.
Oh, yeah.
It is the reason Ennis is the way he is. Why? Because men in this society are simply not taught to deal with emotions. They're taught instead to hold them in, not show them, be strong. If you're not being strong, you're not a man, blah, 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 blah. And nowhere is it better illustrated than in Ennis Del Mar.
God, and the way you have to wonder about his upbringing, there's that whole horrible story he tells about there was a gay couple who lived, like, I guess, near him or near his family, and they lived there for a long time, and then one of them was very brutally murdered and mutilated, and Ennis's father took Ennis and Ennis's brother out and intentionally showed them the corpse. And then Ennis says, for all I know, he did it.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, no wonder he has so much trouble accepting his sexuality. I mean, apart from everything else in American society in 1963.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, it's all better now.
Yeah, well, better now. So
but yes, oh no, the toxic masculinity is rampant in this, and especially you got heavy cowboy culture. That's one of the most, you know, present forms of it. It's one of the essences of it.
And there are no gay cowboys ever. This movie's a lie.
I mentioned, I believe, young men alone on the trail.
That doesn't count.
A lot of hormones.
What happens on the trail doesn't count.
Tight leather chaps.
It's, and it's sad that it honestly is very sad that men that are straight, men that are gay, whatever, are brought up, taught not to show affection for each other. There's other cultures which still have the idea of machismo is still there, but guys can still like put their arms around each other, and all it means is I like you, you're my friend. It doesn't have to mean like that guy's gay, get him.
Yep.
Who the hell cares? Who cares? Mm. But that is why Ennis is broken, and he is broken emotionally. He can carry on, he can exist, but he can't live because he literally doesn't know how. And when he confronted by it, he backs off like it is the most frightening thing in the world.
Yeah.
And
it is so sad. And it just the tragedy of it that Jake is willing to try to live together. And Ennis, he can't. He can't open himself up that much. He can't accept that part of himself. He can't go against everything he's been taught that much.
Yeah. And I would say if the wound from his youth was a scar, it is something that he would have been picking at physically all this time. That he would have a little scab that never closed. That's what this is. And why this is not seen as a problem, I don't know. But it's, you know, this deals all into, now that we have a term for toxic male masculinity, that and the idea of mental health. And you can't help but just feel sorry for Ennis, I think, because not only does he have no idea how to deal with emotion, it's obvious he's never going to find a way. That's it.
It's so touching the way Jake can deal with him in that, during that whole, that very famous I wish I knew how to quit you sequence.
Yep.
And Ennis starts crying.
Well, but it's a violent thing.
It's more like he's like hurting himself. And Jake tries to hug him, and Ennis is practically attacking him for doing it, but Jake won't stop. He won't let him push him away. He just grabs onto him, and Ennis just eventually collapses against him.
Well, and I think one of the most telling things is they never use the word love. They never use the word relationship.
They never say that.
They call it this thing.
This thing.
This thing we've got won't let go. That's the best he could do.
That line, again, that's one they don't talk about as much, but when Ennis says, there ain't no reins on this one.
Yeah.
And he's talking about them. There's no reins. They can't control it.
But he can't even say it. Like, even alone, out in the middle of nowhere with a bear, they can't say it. I got to say, one quick little thing. Looking at Jack's family when they're at that Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah.
Jack, your son's gay. Just telling you right now.
You think so?
I don't know. Just something that just went beep, 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 beep. Okay. Maybe it was a string tie. Don't know. But
I don't know. I still like, you know, grandpa jerk. You know, the boys should watch football. Like,
yeah.
Right. Because you don't want to be a sissy.
There you go. Yeah. So I do like this directorially at the scene you just brought up, the last scene where they're together and it's the I wish I could quit you scene. They cut to a scene of them when they were earlier on in the film, and they're quite honestly meant to be younger. And I didn't think that they'd aged them much until they showed that scene. It's like, oh, they actually have aged. Great contrast, because it seems like their affection at that point is so pure, and now it's just become so complicated.
It has, because they've brought in other people, their other relationships. They've been trying to fulfill the roles they think they're supposed to fulfill. Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Do you think Loreen knew? Anne Hathaway?
I think she must have. She's way too sharp.
I don't know. Up until the very end of the film, I didn't get the impression that she had any idea until
I think
Ennis
she knew.
Her.
I just don't think she really cared.
Well, it seemed like he had been saying that their marriage had become something they did from long distance.
Mm.
But
she was much more into the business side of things. Obviously, she's like, to me, it was pretty clear if she'd been a guy, she would have taken over her father's business.
Right.
But her father, you know, hey, you can't have a girl do that.
Well, time. We should get to that point to see whether we liked the film.
Oh, yeah.
Big but more importantly...
Oh, this could be a shock reveal, yeah?
Do we think that this film was snubbed, or did the right film win the Best Picture Oscar?
Ah, okay.
The finish.
So, Max.
Yeah.
I know you weren't looking forward to this because it is a sad film, but having seen it when it came out, having seen it again, what do you think of Brokeback Mountain?
Oh, God, this is such a good movie, but I don't want to watch it again. It just breaks my heart every time.
Yeah.
Watching Heath Ledger cuddling that shirt at the end. Mm. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Watching all the heartbreak in this movie, and it's so painfully well done.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? Does it still work for you? Does it still get you?
Yeah, it totally gets me. I mean...
We can't quit this movie.
I have some personal connection to this because I am a gay man, and I grew up...
What?
Kel Surprise.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I grew up...
All these years!
Having been taught the same lessons. You don't show emotion. My father used to laugh at me when I cried. To be fair, he laughed at my sister when she cried, too, but whatever. I didn't know what gay was. I just knew that looking at guys was wrong. Somehow, I just knew. Like, you don't do that. And I didn't come out till I was 30 because of that. And I went to a high school where it would have been fine. And I went to a high school where a certain, shall we say, straight member of the same sex liked to wrestle. And to this day, I curse him for it. But... No,
it doesn't mean me, by the way.
No, it was not Max.
Yeah.
It is a very honest, sad story. It is not sensationalizing anything. It portrays a culture and the effects of that culture on its members. And I think it's not even... Oh, yeah, it takes place in 63. Sure. Could it happen today? Yes.
Absolutely.
I think the film's really good.
I wish I could say it couldn't, but of course it could.
I think it's an amazing film. The performances, especially by Jake Gyllenhaal and Heath Ledger, really brave. And I'm going to say a lot of people are going to bring up things like, well, two gay actors should have done this. Maybe. And maybe there are two gay actors that could have done as good a job. Possibly.
Maybe.
I don't know that I would want to see it necessarily in this context because part of the idea is them wrestling with it. And I think that both actors used that when they were doing those scenes. Both of them were like, I'm not gay at all, but I want to do this. And I think it shows a real maturity in both of them that they not only were interested, but they did it. There were some actors they showed this script to that were like, no thanks. Mark Wahlberg being one of them. So... But Crash, now what about
what?
Crash?
No.
No, not Owen Wilson. Did you see Crash? Yeah,
I did. I think I saw it when it came out.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I actually did watch it for this film. I have a few notes. Maybe they'll help bring up some pleasant memories.
Good.
I thought that movie was just too coincidental. In all of L.A., we're led to believe that a very small group of people will continue to just happen to run into each other on generally empty streets or numerous lonely locations.
That's the Dickensian coincidence, and that's sort of the suspension of disbelief part. There is a tradition of it.
I guess, but back then there was a lot fewer people.
Yeah.
And we're talking L.A. Like, you have to drive to meet these people. It's like, sure. It is an ugly film about ugly people, emphasizing racism in many different incarnations. The characters are either horrible people who sort of have a redeeming moment or quality, or they're people who are seemingly good who end up having horrible moments that make you think they have utterly failed. There are some really, really strong performances, not least of which those of Sandra Bullock, who plays a nasty, racist, rich white woman.
Oh, that's right.
Ryan Phillippe, who plays a white cop with a racist partner he can't stand, but then he commits a racist act in the end. Matt Dillon plays a horrible racist and sleazy, I think is what I meant to write, cop.
I hope so.
Sleepy, who molests a woman he pulls over merely to molest her, but whom he later just happens to save from a car accident. It's also quite obviously a tale about racism, told from the point of view of a white man. And heck, there's a surprise performance by Tony Danza, of all people.
Oh, sure.
Best Picture, what do you think?
No.
Why not?
There, we're done. No, I'm sorry. It was... No. I remember thinking that was that was an injustice. Because Crash, first of all, you talk about feeling long. That is a long-ass movie.
Yep.
And it feels like a long-ass movie. I think the pacing is sloppy. I think the message is incredibly ham-handed, and it is very much about, that's all right, we white people are here to solve racism.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it's a... I thought it was... There are some good performances. That is true. There are some decent aspects to it. I don't think it was a best picture, and I do not in any way think it was better than Brokeback Mountain. Brokeback Mountain is a remarkable movie, and it absolutely should have won.
You know, the other word I would use for Brokeback that does not apply to Crash? Mm-hmm. Graceful.
That. Crash is... It's like a crash. It's a blunt object. There's no subtlety to it. There is no elegance.
I will say Don Cheadle does really well in it, and honestly, I'll watch Don Cheadle in anything.
Sure.
But, and yeah, none of the performances are bad. It's just, it's the writing and the blunt direction coincidence of the whole thing just made, I was just like, I think when I asked you about it, you said, I believe when I saw that movie, I kept turning into Grunkle Stan and saying,
oh, come on! Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought it was ugly and hard to get through. After about 20 minutes, I was like, do I want to watch the rest of this? I know people go to movies for different reasons, and a lot of times people want to escape. This is not a movie to use to escape from anything. I don't know.
It's one thing, I don't mind. There are movies that can show you the ugliness of life, and they can show you difficult, painful, awful things, but they do it well.
Yeah.
This is just like, guess what? There's racism, and some people are jerks, and some people aren't. Okay?
Yeah.
In case you didn't get it, I'm going to repeat this every 5 minutes for 3 hours, or however long the movie actually is.
And what's really fun is director Paul Haggis is currently up on sexual harassment charges. Yay!
Wait. Hang on. Okay. Gasp!
I don't know anything about him, but he's in his 70s at this point, and it's like, really? Okay, so I am definitely going to be one of those people that think Brokeback Mountain should have won. It is a much more...
I agree.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's tough to watch. I definitely recommend it at least once. I'm actually glad I saw it again. Mm. And if nothing else, just to see these stunning performances, none of which, if I remember correctly, won an Oscar, except
not
Michelle.
Although Williams. I think Michelle Williams did, yes.
Yeah.
I think she got Best Supporting.
And deserved it. She was so good in this. Small part, but so good. But we should go over our poll question again, because we would love to get your answers. We would like to know, what is your favorite filmic love story? Gay, straight, other, man and his horse, a pine marten and its cheese, whatever. Just let us know. No sheep. No.
Bleed.
Sheep. Bleed, I tell you, bleed. But let us know, and how to let us know, why. You can email us directly at us@maxmikemovies.com. You can go to our website, maxmikemovies.com, where all of our other 281 episodes plus specials are. You can leave comments, let us know what you thought. You can also give us ideas for upcoming series or movies we should watch or movies we shouldn't watch. Heck, I'd take that. Mm. And remember, our 300th episode is... scarily just around the corner, and we could use some ideas of what you'd like us to do. Please don't suggest the movie 300.
I appreciate it if you didn't. Yeah. By the way, I just checked. Michelle Williams did not win.
Oh, she didn't?
She did not. They think the movie won 3 Oscars.
Best director. It was for best director screenplay.
Yep, and best achievement in music, the original score.
Oh, that's right. And it's not like I didn't actually say that last week, but that was last week. Mm-hmm. Where else can you find us? You can find us on Facebook, where we are, Max Mike Movies. Same thing, answer the poll question, leave us comments, suggestions, etc. And lastly, if there is a podcast app out there, or if there's going to be a podcast app out there, more likely than not, we're on there as Max Mike Movies. But...
Oh!
Surprise! Yeah. The second big surprise in this show. Max, we are just starting Didn't Win. So what's the second film in our series going to be?
This is one that always shocked me that it didn't win Best Picture, although when we talk about who did win that year, it's less of a shock, perhaps. But it's another kind of a Western in that it takes place... Well, some of it takes place in the West.
Some of it?
Well, the first bit and the last bit, you know.
Where does the rest of it take place?
The Ozarks.
Okay.
Because that starts with Oz. And yes, we are going to watch The Wizard of Oz.
The Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz, which did not win Best Picture. And, of course, as most people do, we're going to watch it with the soundtrack to Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon.
I actually have done that. Have you done that?
I have never actually done that. It's one of those things I keep meaning to try.
Well, the thing, of course, is that Dark Side of the Moon only lasts about a half an hour, so you got a bunch more movie to watch. Apparently, you can put it on again, and there's still some coincidences, but yeah, there are some. It's fine. I don't know how anyone figured that out, because it's not, like, blaringly obvious or anything, but whatever. So, Wizard of Oz, huh?
Wizard of Oz. I haven't seen that in a while. It's about time. Perfect
bookend to Brokeback Mountain, I think.
I want something happy. I need something magical.
Oh, it's magical, all right. And did I mention gay? Because
it is not. Shut up.
Judy Garland is the biggest gay icon ever.
I know.
Or so I hear, because that's what gay people told me.
Oh, yeah, right. Isn't that in the handbook or something?
Oh, don't say handbook.
Oh!
If you want us to hear us good not night, say handbook everybody. Next week, tune in for Wizard of Oz.
Max Mike Movies is a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.